Words wrapped around my mind. I am living inside the Greek language, listening, looking, mouths move, cheeks are full of beautiful words. My mind wraps itself around words. I wake up thinking Greek words and sentences. Words from my childhood return. Sikopano, get up. Mimilas, don't talk. Vasana, worries. Tina kanuma, what can we do? Gestures, tongue clicks, raised eyebrows, a waving hand, body supplements words. I am once more a child, and I obey orders in Greek. Nap time. Don't go in the sun. Go to your room. Sit in that chair. Then, like a teenager, I disobey. Escape to the beach, to the sea, to the sun. Go out in the afternoon. Don't come back in time for dinner. I am not punished, just questioned. Greek words hit me with pounding energy, then soothe me with musical soft consonants. They swirl in my head, come out of my mouth, strong and clear. I do not recognize my voice, my moving mouth, my mind, altars filled with Greek sounds. And this is another one about language. I kept confusing. This is called Moon Mirror. I looked at the moon, and the Greek word for moon is phingati, but I kept saying kathrefti, which means mirror. I don't know why, so this is about. The Greek word for moon is phingati. I look at it and think, kathrefti, confusing moon with mirror. Looking in the moon, seeing my golden face ridged with canals. Watching the mirror shine full, grow larger, then smaller, then larger, reducing me, expanding me, my body changing with age, though I feel young and childlike. Men of Argynos sitting in the taverna, drink ouzo, and debate about the moon. They cannot decide if it is growing smaller or larger. One man speaks, explains the moon and its movements. The others listen and nod. But no one is sure about the moon and its mysteries. We sit in the cool shadow of the mountain, the ouzo warming us, the beans and tomatoes and feta fulfilling as we dip our bread in tasty oils and discuss the moon. Look at its face, a thin sliver. Look at my face, grow older and younger. Phingati kathrefti. Now this is the one about Arcadia. And we did go through the mountains of Arcadia looking for the villages, looking for relatives. So I traveled with my cousin Yorgos and his mother, who's around 87, and I refer to her as Aunt Maria. She turned out she's my mother's first cousin. The myth of Arcadia. Arcadia, peaceful places where shepherds sit quietly with their sheep, sing to each other, talk of love. My grandfather was born in Arcadia. Isolation, woods, poverty, and abuse, he escaped to America. His wife, my grandmother, never wanted to go back. She remembered hardship, harsh landscapes, sharp paths up the mountains, the painful work of shearing and weaving and cutting. When she mumbled to herself in her later years, we listened closely. Names she uttered, who were they? Lost family, parents, siblings, cousins, friends. We recognized some of those names, characters on the soap operas. She watched daily, believed in, she made them her friends. Write a letter, Aphrodite, she would say. Tell that woman that the man she thinks loves her is planning to kill her. Write a letter, warn her, save her life. My aunt could not convince her that it was make-believe, just a story. Stories, there are many stories of Arcadia, paradise, escape, a place of love and leisure. I do not know if they are just stories. There are other stories of Arcadia, people hiding in the woods, tortured, starving, sending off children to live as slaves, living in huts with sheep and goats, an old woman covered with red spots. Most people left for America, for Athens, for other places, leaving the wolf gods, the pointed mountains, ruins of ancient worlds. Peace returns. A lonely wolf howls at night, searching for the sheep he remembers from some past time, wondering if they really existed or were just a dream. And when I got to Arcadia, it's just old people living in those villages up in the mountains, and there are no sheep and goats anymore. So I came back and said, I've got to put that in the poem, and I looked and I'd already put it in there. I must have known that somehow. This is called The White Queen, and it's about my Aunt Maria and our trip through the mountains. Aunt Maria is topsy-turvy, living backwards like Alice's white queen. Her dreams and memories roll together, which one dreamed it, which is dreamed. She tells the same stories over and over again. Your Yitzhak and the pig, her brother's death, traveling by mule, the boat ticket, these are fixed in her mind, cannot be altered. She is troubled and angry that Basta is not the same as it was 60 years ago, will not admit to faults of memory. She remembers seeing her dead father come back for his coat. She dreams of her dead husband. Maria turns people's deaths into stories, tells of her husband's last hours, his insistence on getting up to use the bathroom. She speaks his words, acts out his last moments. She does the same with her father's death and her brother's. Her family will not use the word die. He has gone away. He left. He is not. But the dead ones live in her dreams, her husband calling her to join him. She calls him to come back to her. Whose dream is it? In Kiparisia, we leave her asleep in the car, return to find her pounding on the window in panic. You locked me in, she cried. A man tried to help me, but he could not open the door. Yorgos opens the door, which is unlocked, and helps her out. Later, I wonder about the mysterious man who could not open an unlocked door, who left her alone in her panic, not coming to find us. A man, perhaps, who is not. A dream man, her father trying to release her, her jealous husband wanting her for himself. I thought I was going to have a heart attack, she said. I couldn't breathe. Yorgos brushes her off, and she walks with us to the house of the priest, whose sad wife, wearing a surfer t-shirt, brings us pastries, dripping with honey. Maria eats neatly, drinks cold water. The priest in his plaid shirt smiles kindly at us. His wife is a Striglis. Her name, too, is Maria. Aunt Maria is the white queen, untidy and wobbly. Her hair keeps falling out of the barrette, which clasps it. Her zipper comes undone. Her skirt slips around backwards. She falls down the stairs, then gets up by herself. Sits on the edge of her bed at 2 a.m. I'm not tired at all, she says. She complains about the heat in the back seat of the car. The sun is in her eyes. She tells her husband to stop working now that he's dead, now that she has stopped sewing. In his dreams, she is still sewing, sitting in the corner of the house, dreaming of him. But she has found her mother's village, found a first cousin there, visited Basta in the church of St. Theodora, fallen down the winding marble staircase of the hotel in Isari, refuses help, gets up by herself. Now, I have some props for this one, but you'll have to come and see them, I guess, afterwards. This is an icon of St. Theodora, and you can see that she's looks like she's part of a tree. And it's got, well, I'll be reading you what translation of what she was known to have said. And this is an amazing church that actually has got, I couldn't believe it until I'd actually seen it, it's got 17 trees growing out of the roof, and you can't find any roots, and so people believe that this is holy, and a lot of people go there to pray. She was from Basta, my grandparents' village, in, I think, the first or second century, and the story about her is so remarkable, but so was my time visiting this shrine, so that's what this is about. 17 trees. 17 trees grow from the roof, leaves like hair framing a white face. 17 syllables, a haiku, a perfect condensed image, a saint, nature upholding, decorating the church. Trees without roots, or with invisible roots, a miracle. People worship this image, a natural icon. Theodora lived in Basta, my grandparents' village. Now she is the dust underneath this church. We light candles to her, to our dead ancestors, to ourselves. Yorgos protesting that the roots do exist, reaching through cement walls down into the ground. Aunt Maria complaining, worrying. This is not how she remembers this place. 60 years ago, when she traveled here by mule with her two children, there were no roads. Aunt Yorgitsa lived here, she says, but where are the houses? Where are the hot and cold water spouts? Why have they built walls around the church? There were never houses here, the vendors tell her. The houses are in the village of Basta. Go there, ask people. There is water, hot and cold. The vendors sell icons and souvenirs of Basta. The priest smiles at us, watches us drop coins in a box for candles, for relics. I walk around and around the church, look at the trees from all sides, trees mysteriously intertwined with the building, pushing up and out as if to break the roof, open the church to heaven, to air, release the soul of Saint Theodora. Her expressionless face, flattened by iconic art, genderless, Theodora, Theodoris, young virgin, colonel in the army, disguised to fulfill her family's duty. Successful, until accused of impregnating a woman, refusing to marry her. I cannot marry her, she says, but she never tells why. The soldiers undressing her executed corpse, unwrap, unfold, breasts too large to be a man's, no appendage for impregnating women. They make her a saint, call the woman who loved her a whore, a lying whore, pregnant. Theodora lied too, but she is worshipped, worshipped for never bearing a child, for keeping silent, giving birth instead to trees, to 17 trees. May my hair become trees, she prays, my body a church, my blood a river. She becomes this icon, this haiku, her body once more, feminine, long hair, rustling leaves. Blood, the menstrual blood that she hid to become a man, now a river, visible, proclaiming her womanhood. Guilty priests and soldiers could not bear the success of her masculine self. The face in the icon looks masculine. An Adam's apple juts from her neck. Her strong hands hold a thin cross, light and fragile. The semicircles under her eyes are dark shadows of her golden halo. Her eyes look up, slantwise, evasive. Her hair pulled back to control it. Her hair, thick and brown, like mine. Curls wanting to bounce free, as they will, finally and forever. 17 trees, growing out of the church, their thick leaves forming a shaggy halo, irregular and fertile, lifting themselves out of the tiles and cement. A woman bursting with energy. A portrait of Theodora, a portrait of me. I want her to be my ancestor. I wander around and around the church. My grandmother may have prayed at this shrine, dreamed of her future husband. My grandfather may have sat here where I am sitting now, praying for a way to America. He found it, left his family, never saw them again. Perhaps he wished for a granddaughter who would return here, light a candle in honor of him and her mysterious roots. I glimpse one small root in the earth here near Basta, home of Theodora. One leaf, the smallest one, nods to me in recognition. My hair blows in all directions, though there is no wind.